Hope everyone is doing well with the warmer weather. I think we're heating up a little bit, right? Finally feels like summer. Some of our students are still taking finals this week, so you can pray for them. I'm sure they're very stressed out right now. Before we do get going this morning, as we get started, I want to just say thank you. We're really grateful for the love and support of your prayers and encouragements from last week. For those of you who were not able to make it last week, we had a pretty big fundraiser for our Thailand team who's going on missions in a few weeks. Oh man, kind of just fell on me right now. We're leaving in a few weeks to go on missions. But thank you for all your support. We definitely raised quite a bit more than we were anticipating. And so your generosity, your prayers, your words of encouragement were really uplifting, I think, for myself as well as the team that we're part of. I think we can speak for them about them. We're excited to be supported by the church to go and do ministry. Also, thank you for your prayers. Last week, we showed a slide of about 15 college students who are going on missions this summer, going across the world to various places to spread the gospel. And it is by your prayers and encouragement, of course, the growing up in this church, I think, that has really spurred on that opportunity for them to go and do ministry in a different place, different culture, different country. And so thank you again for your help, your support, your prayers. Before we jump in to this morning's message, I wanted to ask a very important question. I think that will help us flow through this message this morning. Who are you following? Who are you following? Oops, let me go back. Real quick. In this day and age, we do a lot with social media. It's funny, I was sitting in Pastor Chris's Sunday school class this morning, and this is all about social media. And that question is very appropriate, I think, this day, maybe to perhaps for the younger generation. Who do you follow? And that means a lot of different things, right, to different people. In social circles and social media especially, who do you follow determines how popular you are. And what I flashed real quick was the flight ministry or college ministry's Instagram. And this is what they know. This is what our students know who follows what, right? Who follows you and who do you follow, right? Instagram is determined and measured by who you follow and who follows you. I think the golden rule, right, in Instagram is you must have more followers than you follow people. Is that right? I think that's right. So we have this page and it, you know, shows pictures of what we do. It's, you know, kind of the hip thing to do right now. I don't really get it, you know, but the kids love it, I think. And the opportunity is, and the chance to be followed or to follow people, that determines what you see and what information you get, what pictures you see. Also, PS for you parents, if you want to be hip as well, get an Instagram account. Maybe your child will follow you, maybe, but maybe they'll let you see what is on their Instagram. The only way that you can see other people's Instagrams if they allow you to follow or they are public. But it's all about followers. Who follows you? Who do you follow? And it's the same way in which we gain information these days too. I think on the internet, right, there are a lot of things that are going on in the background on what's following us, what is tracking our understanding, our information. The sad news, right, filled our feeds this week of a lot of things. Perhaps there was also sadness, but also elation. You know, we championed two teams this week, right, both in hockey, probably the lesser popular sport, and then basketball, of course. What fills your feeds, right? What determines that is who you follow, which sites you visit, what web pages you go to. And that determines, again, who, sometimes in a lot of ways, who you follow. What are you gaining? What information do you have? And today we're going to look at a character who had a difficulty, I would say, in following the people around him. He had a lot of choices in who he should follow. In fact, in a lot of ways, he was torn in his loyalty on who exactly he should follow, what path he should take. And it wasn't easy for him. It wasn't just a click of a button to unfollow or follow for this character, right? And we're going to look at the life of Jonathan in following God. It's actually a very difficult opportunity or chance for him in choosing that, in picking somebody to follow in his life. We are in a short series this summer on looking at kind of these minor characters. And I think there's some really good lessons to learn from looking at this. And we don't often see him, see these characters in this way. And we're going to look this morning at three major life events in the life of Jonathan. And a lot of this is going to be a little bit of background and then kind of understanding of that. But I think there's a really great picture that God is painting through his life and through these series of events that happened to Jonathan this morning. And so this, what we read this morning, the passage that we looked at, is kind of dropped right in the middle of kind of the conflict that is happening, the tension that you see here, with Jonathan being amongst two other people. And you can't talk about Jonathan without talking about those around him. So there's Saul, his father, who is currently the king of Israel. So a little bit of Israelite history here. You have Jonathan himself, which we'll get into as well. And you have David, who is the next king. Right, he's upcoming. And so this obvious kind of caught in the middle situation that Jonathan finds himself in very often is going to come up here. And who is it that Jonathan is going to follow? What is it that will determine what he does? Very eye-opening, and at least, you know, the way that I looked at this and the way that we're going to approach this morning. But to understand Jonathan, to know who he is, we have to go back a little bit. Right, so if you have your Bibles open, I have slides of our verses today, but it's good to kind of gain context as well. So if you would flip back about four chapters to 1 Samuel 14, and that chapter really gives us a picture of where Jonathan comes from. One of the very first stories of Jonathan as he is living in the kingdom right now. His father has become king. He is following in his footsteps. He is going along with his father. And all throughout this time period for Israel history, they are at war. And so the Philistines come up very often in there. Now, the enemy is the Philistines here. They're fighting over territory of the land. And there's a lot of battles waging at this point. And we find here in chapter 14, Jonathan comes up. And this is before a battle that they have. And I'm going to summarize a little bit because of the time that we have together is not much. But right before they go to battle, both sides are at arms with one another. They are ready to go to battle. And this is almost like the night before they head into a conflict. And Jonathan, in his maybe youth, in his haste, decides to go and attack the Philistines almost in the middle of the night, maybe right before dawn, you know. And the Bible tells us that the geography in that location was kind of this high cliffs, this big valley, and a lot of jagged rocks were there. And so Jonathan used the high ground to his advantage. And so one night, Jonathan decides to go to where the Philistines have camped. And he kind of climbs these rocks, and he actually reveals himself on these cliffs. And the Philistines see him and say, "Look, the Israelites are coming. They're going to attack us by surprise." And so they climb up, and they try to attack Jonathan. And the Bible goes on to say that because of the height and because of the timing of all this, Jonathan is able to take on many, many Philistines at that time. About 20 of them, actually. And it's described here in verse 14. It says this: "The first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about 20 men within about half a furrow in an acre of land. And there was a trembling in the camp, in the field, and among all the people. Even the garrison and the raiders trembled, and the earth quaked so that it became a great trembling." This story really puts Jonathan on the map. What he does is almost like, you know, that movie 300, that level of popularity, that intensity. He takes on these men, and he's able to take out a pretty large group of people who have attacked him. Him and just his armor bearer. You can imagine, you know, maybe it was a little easy because of the high ground and whatnot, but still, there is great trembling, right? There is kind of a reverberation of the news throughout the camps. Who is this person? What did he do? He just took on so many people in this tight little space. And he's doing really well. And it actually triggers a major win in Israelite's battle. The Bible goes on to say that Israel wins this because of the fear that's happened just by this one action in which Jonathan does. Israel is able to confuse the Philistines in that place, and you know they are victorious pretty easily, pretty handedly. And the people of Israel don't forget about Jonathan's victory. Right? This goes down in history. Again, it's almost that popularity story that, wow, how many men have you taken on all by yourself or just with you and one other person? But we find Jonathan later on in the same chapter in a predicament himself. Further down through the chapter, towards the end of it actually, we find that Saul is now accusing his own son of a sin. And without getting into too much detail about that as well, because we don't really have the time, but there's a detailed story about Jonathan making a mistake and Saul blaming him for really God not giving great direction for the next battle to go on. And towards the end of this chapter, we kind of flip around a little bit from Jonathan's success to now, he is in trouble a little bit, to verse 45. I think this should work. Good. Jonathan's in trouble, and his own father, as crazy as the whole situation is, wants to kill him. But something great happens. The people said to Saul, verse 45, "Must Jonathan die, who has brought about this great deliverance in Israel? Far from it. As the Lord lives, not one hair of his head shall fall to the ground, for he has worked with God this day." So the people rescued Jonathan, and he did not die. Then Saul went up from pursuing the Philistines, and the Philistines went to their own place. Again, it's a very weird story that happens here, but the results are very telling of the way that Jonathan has come up into this world now. We see him defeat many Philistines. His popularity story is well known, almost to the point, and greatly to the point, that now he's saved by his own people. He is now well known. He has gained the popularity of them. He has gained favor, and his life is spared. He has the people's attention now of the Israelites, as well as, I think, the enemy, too. And he's beloved. And so through this first story of understanding Jonathan, kind of where he's come from, he's now known as a great warrior. He's gaining popularity and fame. He is actually saved by the people because of that fame. And he's heir to the throne. He should be heir to the throne. I think we don't realize that Jonathan's actually next in line after Saul. And so you put all these pieces together. If you think about where Jonathan comes from, he is in line to be the next king. He has all the makings of a great king, a great warrior. He succeeds in battle. He has the favor of the people. He's looking for the next thing. Right? Great success has happened to him. And if you would pause right now to put yourself in Jonathan's shoes, how would you have felt? Maybe you've gotten a great promotion, some great recognition in your life. Maybe perhaps you did well at school. You're getting good grades. You're moving towards this career path that you put yourself on. You've experienced great success. There's a great direction that you're moving in. I think Jonathan felt the same way at this point in his life. And what's next? Right? That's kind of the natural thinking. What's going to happen to me now? And unfortunately, I think we all, if you know, we've been following along and paying attention, Jonathan does not become king next, right? We come back to our reading. We kind of fast forward a little bit to chapter 18 again. Let me read verse 30 one more time for us of chapter 18. "Then the commanders of the Philistines went out to battle, and it happened as often as they went out that Jonathan behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so his name was highly esteemed." Oh, wait. It doesn't say Jonathan, right? Shouldn't it say Jonathan at this point? If you think of what's next, what is to come for him in his life, shouldn't he be the one who is succeeding? That's his natural next step, to be in line to defeat Philistines, for his name to be well known. No, it doesn't say that. It says David, right? Who is this David? Where did he come from? All of a sudden, David is in the picture here. And in four short chapters, probably not as short as you think, but in four chapters, there's this new guy that has come up. It really should have been Jonathan, I want to say. And I'm sure Jonathan thought the same thing too. Should it have been me next? And again, we can't talk about Jonathan without looking at the characters around him. And so in the rise of David, we see these things happen. He's anointed to be the next king by Samuel, the prophet. Basically, the prophet of God. God is saying, this is the next king. This is the next heir. I have chosen the successor to Saul. And Saul has fallen out of favor with the Lord. The Bible says that as well. David has also defeated Goliath in these four chapters that have happened, progressed from chapter 14 to 18. And we know that story pretty well. You know, this boy comes in, defeats Goliath, basically calls God as the victor of that. And David begins to win many battles himself. You thought Jonathan was a good warrior. David is far much more successful. And he becomes best friends, actually, with Jonathan. So he's getting to know the royal family. Right? The Bible also says that Jonathan and David, as we read this morning, were knit together. They got along very, very well. Their souls were almost intertwined in understanding each other and doing kind of the same thing in living life and growing up together. And then one step further, David actually marries into the royal family. So here's this guy, David, who has come into the spotlight now. He is called to be the next king. He is heir to the throne instead of Jonathan. And he's a chosen one, all while very closely being with his friend Jonathan. And David has now taken the place of that instead of our character study here. As a result of David's success, we look on the other side. Saul, how did he react? What did he do? Rather than praising David for what he has done, David is actually winning all these battles for the kingdom, for Saul. Saul actually reacts very harshly, very wrongly, I would say. He keeps a very close eye on David. Once he is anointed king, that almost starts this chain reaction for Saul. I'm going to keep him close, keep an eye on him. He invites David into the royal house. David almost has this freedom to walk in and out, to be in the presence of the king, to be with the family. And that's how he gets to know his friend Jonathan really well. That's how he marries into the family. And the Bible says that Saul became wildly jealous of David's success. He's actually very fearful. He wanted his success to be greater than David's, to the point where Saul attempts to kill him. We read that this morning as well. Attempts to kill David. And this is Saul's reaction to the story. Very different, right, from the other side of what David is doing. But guess who is stuck in the middle of all this? Jonathan. How do you think he reacts? How do you think he felt seeing his best friend succeed, doing well, winning, all while his father, Jonathan's father, is being jealous, is angry, maybe a little violent? And I think we don't realize how much Jonathan may have gone through himself to be stuck between these two places. But this is his reaction. It's very interesting. If you look at chapter 19, verses 4 through 6, we read that this morning. Let me reiterate this again. Then Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, "Do not let the king sin against his servant David, since he has not sinned against you, and since his deeds have been very beneficial to you. For he took his life in his hand and struck the Philistines, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance to all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by putting David to death without a cause?" Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan, and Saul vowed, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death." Jonathan goes against the expectations of his own father. And the call here, the command that Saul actually gives is that it is time to kill David. Instead, Jonathan plays peacemaker. And amid the fighting between these two people, perhaps the two people that Jonathan loves the most in his life, they are at war with one another. Jonathan instead has great resolve to try and appease his father while saving the life of his best friend. And he does a pretty good job, right? Jonathan is able to convince his father not to kill his best friend. And everything works out. Actually, they don't. Right? A couple of verses later, as we just read this morning, we find that Saul goes back on his word in this verse. And he is at arms with David. Right? He has pinned David to the wall with a spear, and that's one of the first attacks that they have, the first conflicts. And so what Jonathan says actually does no good. In fact, it might have made things worse. Because soon after, we begin to see this conflict that happens over a long time. Years of this chasing, of this fighting, of this conflict, this tension actually grows larger and larger. Saul basically spends the rest of his life chasing after David, trying to kill him. And instead of peace, Jonathan finds himself in the middle of great conflict between, again, his father, the king, and his best friend, who is supposed to be the next king. It sounds like something out of a Korean drama, right? But can you feel for Jonathan? Can you sense the tension that he must have felt here? Who does he follow? What decisions does he make? He has just tried to appease both sides, and it has failed miserably. So what does he do? What is next? What is there to do? Oh, and guess what? There's also war going on right now, right? Don't forget that. The Israelites were at war with the Philistines. And the two best people to lead that war are fighting amongst themselves. And so I think we find here that Jonathan is probably the most level-headed person in this difficult situation. I could see him making decisions for the kingdom in the absence of his father, who is busy chasing David. David, who can't make a decision himself because he is fighting for his life. How does Jonathan do this? How can you find the peace here? How can you find a way to help both sides? It must be so hard for him to do that. I do want to say that in this moment, though, in this chance, how he was able to do this, he was able to have the courage to speak up. He's able to have the courage to go against even his own father's wishes, right? To be a peacemaker still. We learn those things from kind of this episode of Jonathan's interactions. But how does he do this? With a flip very far forward in advance of the story here to one of the last interactions that Jonathan has with David. If you would go to chapter 23 of 1 Samuel, same book, chapter 23, I'm going to read from verse 15. Verse 15 says this: Now David became aware that Saul had come out to seek his life while David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David at Horesh and encouraged him in God. Thus he said to him, Do not be afraid, because the hand of Saul, my father, will not find you, and you will be king over Israel, and I will be next to you. And Saul, my father, knows that also. So the two of them made a covenant before the Lord, and David stayed at Horesh while Jonathan went to his house. And again, this is one of the last recorded interactions between Jonathan and David. Actually, this is one of the last mentions of Jonathan in person here of the Bible. And David, after probably years of running, this is his last, kind of one of his last stands. He is tired, and I don't know if you can imagine him just running over and over again, not having a home, not feeling settled. And there's story after story of just David running from Saul, also fighting for his life too on the run because the Philistines are in the territory as well. But Jonathan comes out here and encourages his friend. He helps him. He gives him great hope. And it's something pretty amazing here, actually. He tells David, Do not be afraid. You will be king over Israel. And David's like, Are you serious right now? David's been running for his life. Again, running to the countryside, location to location. He is tired of this. He has fought for his life probably more than we can count. And David's like, how can you say that I will be king in this moment? We can see this as maybe David's one of his darkest hours that he has. Jonathan has the resolve, though, the courage to say these words to his friend. You will be king. This is going to happen. God has promised it. And Jonathan reminds David of this great promise, I think. And Jonathan is able to be a peacemaker. He's able to stay level-headed because he is following the right person. Right? He's very encouraging. And he goes back and says, God is the one who will bring us through. Your life might be in danger every single day, but you can have hope. There is an end in sight. I know that there is a God who will fulfill his promises. This is an amazing realization. Right, here's a person that's stuck in the middle of a lifelong struggle between his own father and his best friend. Probably had a very difficult time picking which side he should go to, he should follow. And Jonathan, in his very own right, we looked at this in the very first story, he could have taken the throne at this point. What would have stopped him from allowing Saul to kill David? And Jonathan would have taken the throne. Perfect fit. He knew exactly what was going on. Level-headed, peacemaker, great warrior. Why not? Let things play out. Jonathan, in his own right, could have been king. He could have let things play out himself. But instead, Jonathan knows and holds and is faithful to God's choice. God's choice in David. We all know how David does, right? Probably not one of the greatest kings to live. But we see Jonathan's stance. It's in such confidence. It is in such faithfulness. Could you stand there and say that? In this time? I don't know if I could. The kingdom could have easily belonged to Jonathan. He was more than capable. But Jonathan's resolve, you will be king over Israel. God has chosen you, not me. And God is in control, not me. And this is Jonathan's great confidence to say to his best friend that God has your back. God will take care of you. God will fulfill his promises. And so we learn in this instance that Jonathan is a great encourager. He is one who is faithful. He is one who trusts in God's plan. We walk through these three stories this morning. And in these three instances, who do you think Jonathan followed? His father? His future? Or his friend? All right, we started off this message with me asking you, who do you follow? And I think if we had these three choices in front of us, it'd be very, very difficult. And we have the influences of maybe our traditions, our families, perhaps longing for us to go a certain direction, go a certain path for us. We definitely saw that in the push that Saul had on his son, Jonathan. And we see that Jonathan could have easily taken control of his own life. He could have stepped in as king at any time. And then his friend as well, right? David, the chosen one. I think a lot of you are thinking, yeah, he chose his friend. He chose David, right? End of story. That's it. But I want us to realize one last thing this morning. At the end of chapter 23's passage here in verse 18, it says, so the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. David stayed in Horesh while Jonathan went to his house. Why do they split up at that moment? Jonathan has just promised David, you will be king. He holds to God's faithfulness. And he also says this really cool thing, interestingly, I will be next to you. Jonathan has planned out the future. He thinks that the perfect situation is David becomes king, his father Saul probably dies at some point, and Jonathan will stand next to David and rule. They will rule together. They will do this thing together as best friends, hand in hand. Right? Great story. End. The end. That's it. But that doesn't happen. David stays where he is. Jonathan goes home. Jonathan doesn't go to his father. He doesn't go to Saul, who, by the way, is still chasing David at this point. But Jonathan's able to leave the presence of his friend. Why? Because he chose God. He doesn't elevate his friendship to the point where he is worshiping that in itself. He is able to leave here because he trusts in a higher power. He trusts in God to say that even if I don't help David become who he's supposed to become, God will do it. God has the power. Not Jonathan, not their best laid plans, not even the promise that they have, the friendship that they are tied together in. Jonathan does not elevate that. He's able to leave because he trusts in God's plan. He trusts in God's sovereignty. Now, I wish I could say that Jonathan got everything that he wanted. That yes, you know, Saul passes away, David becomes king, we all know that, and Jonathan stands by his side in every step of the way, helping him be a great king. It doesn't happen that way, sadly. Despite our best efforts to want a perfect resolution, to talk about Jonathan, you know, becoming a great person, to, you know, write his death off really well, none of that happens for Jonathan, sadly. At the end of 1 Samuel, if you read chapter 31, Jonathan is defeated by the Philistines along with his two brothers, and that is the only verse about Jonathan and his death. After that, Saul actually gets a death that is very well described and in detail. Jonathan gets this one line about dying. There's a very good lesson here to learn, that following God doesn't mean we get what we want. It doesn't mean that everything turns out right in the end. It's a perfect situation, happy ending, put a bow on it, call it a day. It means that God is glorified. Even though Jonathan dies, a death that no one maybe even knows about, God is magnified. God is glorified in this story. David goes on to become king, and God's plan is finished. Who or what are you choosing to follow? Is it our best laid plans that we have before us, our futures? Do we desire a little bit of fame, a little bit of popularity? Are we living maybe in the shadow of our parents who have longed for us to do a certain thing? Is it the loyalty of our friends that helps us decide what we should or should not do? I hope that we will choose to follow God. It doesn't mean it always makes sense. I don't think it made sense a lot of times for Jonathan and his decisions and what he did. There's no fanfare, there's no acclaim. Right? We are not elevated here. That's not the point of following God. God is elevated. It is for his glory, for his purposes. So a couple of things as we close this morning. Following God requires activity. I think in every story that is said here, Jonathan did something, whether it was, you know, going out maybe a little bit foolishly to attack, learning that, understanding his giftedness, if it was speaking up for what he believed in, and if it was encouraging, going out on a limb, encouraging his friend, he did something. And so following God, I think, requires activity. We're not just sitting idly and waiting for God to go do something, to have this miraculous sign to say, okay, I'm going to follow God now because this sign has happened. But what will you do to follow God each and every day? To actively look for what God is doing, to actively participate in learning about what God is doing? How will you do it actively rather than passively? I want that to be kind of one understanding of knowing Jonathan and his story. Second thing is, following God will stretch us. It was very, very hard in the struggle that Jonathan had between his father and his friend. I wouldn't want to be in the same position to do that. And he struggled probably to focus on what God was doing and his resolve to be faithful to God's choice, right, to help David become king, to be by his side, to encourage him, but to also hold back from his own desires, his own future, maybe his own right. That is a struggle. That is hard to do. So know that it is going to be a difficult path following God. But know that it is not for you. It is for his glory, for his purpose. And I hope that following God is for his success, not your own success, not for your own fame or your own acclaim. I'm actually going to invite the worship team to come and close. I'm going to end with kind of a simple story. I think it's a good way to kind of put things in perspective. I'm going to highlight our college students for a second. And this is not me boasting at all. I don't think I've done anything to warrant any of this at all. But I just marveled at the students who are deciding to dedicate their summers to God, whether they're going on missions, some of them are staying here to help with the summer enrichment program, and they have set in their ways that they're going to dedicate the summer to God. And the mission trip might end, you know, a different outcome that they anticipate. They might learn a great lesson. They may not learn anything. And a lot of these students, you know, they're succeeding in their classes. They're doing really well. They might be on to the next thing, maybe going to grad school, perhaps in line for a job, a career even. There might be job offers. But they have dedicated this summer. They have allowed themselves to be ready, to be willing to follow what God is calling them to do. And for a lot of them, reading their stories of why they decided to do this, it was a process. It was a journey for themselves to follow God, to go to, I think a lot of them talked about the missions conference this past winter, to commit to going to that, to be listening to God, right? To hear from what God has been speaking into them. They were active in following him. And it's not an easy decision, I think. I think perhaps a lot of them, you know, they had to kind of balance between helping their parents understand that they want to do this. They might not be able to do an internship this summer, might not be able to go to summer school to get ahead of themselves. But I think they have set in their hearts, at least from my perspective, and my hope is that they want God's glory to be known. And I bring this up, not to boast about them, but I hope this is a challenge for all of us. How are we going to be active in following after God? And knowing that the reality is it's not going to be easy, but we're going to choose to do that all the time. And how are we going to focus in on giving God what he deserves in worship and living for him and following after his aspirations, not our own? And that takes some thought. I think that takes some activity to go and do something about that. Go and learn about that. Be available to what God is doing and how he's moving. I'm going to pray, and we'll respond with a song. God, we thank you for the life of Jonathan. And Lord, there's a lot to kind of digest and look at here, but we know that you have called him to follow after you wholeheartedly. And we see that resolve. We see that confidence that he had to actively move towards that, to pursue after you. And in these actions, in these small ways, God, your will was done. Your plan was executed. Your ways were sovereign. And God, as hard as it was, perhaps, for Jonathan to do all this, we see you in this. We see that you gave him that confidence. We see that you upheld him, and you allowed him to do your great work, Lord, so that you might be glorified. You gained the success, not him. So thank you for this example. May we, as your people, Lord, do the same in following hard after you and being active and listening to you and what you're saying. Help us not to follow the things of this world, Lord, the things that are so easy to fill our feeds, to fill what we look at. But may we chase after you. May we look towards you, Lord. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.